Sciences for Health as a technical officer, and in her work there, she focuses on healthcare financing, including performance-based financing and health system strengthening. Her overseas work includes Haiti, Kenya, Malawi, Rwanda, and Uganda. She has a bachelor's in biology from the College of Worcester and a master's in public health with a focus in global health from Boston University. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sort of tough group of colleagues to follow here, and I know it's the last presentation, so hopefully you'll find it interesting, and you'll all be able to stay awake. I know it can be a little bit of a struggle. So I'm going to talk a little bit about a piece of work that was conducted looking at MSH's work in performance-based financing and healthcare services in Haiti. This was an external evaluation that we conducted with Brandeis University. So you see the two logos there at the top. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about what is performance-based financing, give you a little bit of some country context to Haiti, talk about our work, our experience with PBF, and then methods, results, discussion, conclusion, and implications. So I have no relationships to disclose. And performance-based financing is defined by the Center for Global Development Working Group on Payment for Performance as the transfer of money or material goods from a funder or other supporter to a recipient conditional upon that recipient taking a measurable action to achieving a predetermined performance target. So performance-based financing is a really great tool to help improve health program effectiveness, equity, and to target some specific results, particularly priority interventions, in this case on women and children, and to enhance sustainability, transparency, and ownership of country health programs. So by directing resource flows to high-impact health services, populations seeking care are then met with competent, motivated service delivery providers who are able to deliver those key services. So in Haiti, as we heard a little bit at the beginning of the session, it's one of the least developed countries in the world, ranking 145 out of 169 on the UN Development Index. The maternal mortality rate is 87 per 1,000 live births. The global average for under five mortality is 80. And the regional, I think this is particularly interesting, the regional average is 18. So the maternal mortality rate, 300 per 100,000 live births, global average 260, again, regional average 66. So the leading causes of death in children under five are acute respiratory infection, including pneumonia, as well as diarrhea. So MSH has been working in Haiti since implementing performance-based financing since 1999 under four consecutive USAID contracts. So the project is currently supporting, that says 27, I actually think it's 28 local and international NGOs across the country. And our project right now is currently working to expand the performance-based financing mechanism into the public sector. So again, the indicators that the performance-based financing mechanism focuses on are maternal and child health indicators, vaccination, antenatal care, assisted deliveries, child health visits, and maternal reproductive health. So a little bit of the timeline of the PBF program in Haiti, I think it's pretty interesting. In 1996, MSH began supporting a network of NGOs providing critical primary healthcare services. From 1996 to 1999, these NGOs were supported by a cost reimbursement. And in 1999, a population-based survey was conducted and identified some extremely uneven performance between the NGOs. Two examples include some NGOs reaching 70% of their immunization coverage, others reaching only 10. So project staff began to speculate that perhaps the payment system placed too much emphasis on transparent documentation as opposed to achievement of results. So in 1999, they created a PBF pilot scheme, and moved three NGOs into this scheme. They were incredibly happy with the way that the pilot was going, that between 2000 and 2005, all of the remaining NGOs were phased out of cost reimbursement and into the performance-based financing scheme. So from 2005 up to now, we've been operating all of those NGOs under that performance-based financing scheme. So critical to the success of that scheme is regular, accurate, timely monitoring and reporting. In addition to the bonus mechanism, the performance-based payment, there's also technical assistance provided by our project, which is based in Port-au-Prince, to the organizations that help them set and meet targets, as well as take corrective actions if they see that they're missing their targets. So data are reported monthly from NGOs to the MSH office, and so the project is tracking whether or not they're on target. So the last thing is that they regularly change their contracting mechanism, but right now there's a very innovative mechanism of selecting the incentivized indicators. So in vaccination, clinics are providing a number of vaccination services. Only one will end up being an incentivized indicator, but they won't know which indicator that is until they go to the MSH office where they pull that indicator from a hat or from an envelope. So it's a really interesting mechanism, and I was fortunate enough to be in Port-au-Prince when they were making the payment. So that was a really interesting programmatic component of our project to get to see. So a little bit about the methods of the study. We had both a quantitative and a qualitative component. So our major data source was the national HMIS, the Health Management Information System, from four departments: Northeast, North, South, and Central. For those of you who are familiar with Haiti, you're going to notice the West department is missing, which is where Port-au-Prince is. After the earthquake in 2010, a vast amount of health information was lost. So anything that was at the national level became really difficult to get, and also anything for that particular department. So we were able to either travel to these departments, or our project staff were able to travel to these departments and directly get their information from their provincial or regional offices. So our data set was 217 health facilities, 15 implementing PBF, 202 not implementing PBF, and we selected four indicators that are regularly reported to the HMIS that would be relevant markers for incentivized services and non-incentivized services. One of the things that I think is a really interesting component of the methods of this study was we looked at PBF facilities and non-PBF facilities, and then within that, incentivized and non-incentivized services, since only some of the facilities will be incentivized through the performance-based payment. So to separate the effect of incentives from the technical assistance and training provided to all of the facilities operating under the performance-based financing scheme, we used regression analysis to sort of parse out those relationships. So in addition to that, we also conducted qualitative interviews with four PBF implementing NGOs in the West Department. Our research team of four conducted these interviews, and our team was comprised of both members with expertise in public health as well as health service research. So not only did we talk to healthcare providers, but we also talked to managers and the more administrative leaders, both at the NGOs as well as their service delivery points. So now we'll dive into the results. This is the result for one individual service, consultations for pregnant women. I'm only going to show you this one service, but as a note, it is these charts and figures looked similar for all of the services that we looked at. So as you can see, the fitted trend line here demonstrates that The services are growing faster in the PBF facilities, which are the gray bars, at a rate of 4.2% per quarter than in the non-PBF facilities, where the services were growing at 1.5% per quarter. So it's important to look at this through a lens of the following four pieces of caution, I guess. So the data only exists for 12 quarters, and we broke it out from years to quarters, so there would be more points along the trend line. Future trend lines or future growth rates aren't depicted here, and there is some variability across each of the quarters. And our sample size for our intervention group is small. Given those limitations, we still think that these are telling. So the next thing we're going to look at is the summary index for the incentivized services. Again, these are going to be services for children under the age of 5 and pregnant women. And you can see here that in the PBF facilities, again, the gray bars, they were growing at a rate of 10% per quarter compared to 1.1% per quarter in non-PBF facilities. And that's for the incentivized services. So if you look at the non-incentivized services, they were growing both in the PBF and non-PBF facilities as well, but at a lower rate. So the performance-based financing, the bonus payment, the incentive, increased incentivized services by 5.7% per quarter, while non-incentivized services grew by 2.7% per quarter. So you can see those bolded at the bottom of the screen, and that difference is a statistically significant difference. Over the 3 years, incentivized services were growing at a rate of 87%. Now, this is the combined effect of both the incentive and the heightened technical assistance monitoring that is provided by our project. The non-incentivized services grew by 35%. So this is the isolated effect of the strengthened monitoring and evaluation. The pure effect of the incentives is about 39% over the course of the 3 years. So we, when we went to Haiti, we presumed that the performance-based financing mechanism was going to have an increase, an impact in service utilization. So the qualitative component was a great opportunity for us to talk to implementers and service providers and NGO managers about why do you think you are facilities are doing well and growing and improving. So I think a couple of the key take-home messages were that systematic planning and monitoring led to more effective management across the board. Sound monitoring and evaluation ensures that facilities are able to track their progress. And certainly, who's not motivated by an available bonus, a bonus structure? So not only was it a motivating factor, one of the things that I found particularly striking was that it's a mechanism for accountability. So not only were they motivated by the money, but they were motivated by achieving a result and knowing that they had done it. So that was particularly interesting. I want to talk quickly about the strengths and the weaknesses, strengths and limitations maybe of the study. I think the strengths, again, are in that really unique methodology of both the mixed methods and looking at the PBF facilities and the non and the incentivized services and the non-incentivized services. The difference in difference calculations that we were able to use to isolate the impact of the financial incentives, and having a control group. Other work has been produced looking at the impact of performance-based financing in Haiti. It was published in the mid-2000s, but there wasn't really a control group beyond PBF NGOs in the PBF scheme and NGOs not. So this gave us the opportunity to explore differences in facilities not receiving any bonus technical assistance, monitoring, things like that. So some of the limitations of this study are that we were only able to examine the quantity, not the quality of services. So the hope of performance-based financing is that you link both quantity and quality of services. And we weren't able to find good markers for that for this particular study. The control group certainly may have had differed in some systematic way from the facilities that are supported by MSH. SDSH is the acronym for our project, which is in French, and for my colleagues who speak French, I won't offend you with my with my butchering of your beautiful language. Again, like I said before, future trends aren't taken into account here. Data only exists for 3 years, and we have a small sample size. But of the intervention, the small sample size of the intervention facilities. So the key messages that I want to leave you with today is one, that the addition of performance-based incentives coupled with training and technical assistance for the 27 NGOs increased the key services over a 3-year period by more than 30% with technical and training technical assistance and training alone. Improvements related to the use of PBF were particularly associated for services targeting children, children under 1, but children under 5, and also pregnant women. And the incentives proved more effective and substantially less expensive than training and the technical assistance alone. So that's the end.
Any quick clarifying questions? Yes.
I want to ask, it was mainly quantitative, the report was mainly based on quantitative data, like the measures, the rate that you got for the athletes. What measures were taken to make sure that this information was accurate, that they weren't just inflating their rates and who they were seeing to get to the bonuses? Now, when you say that MSH was monitoring these facilities, what exactly did the monitoring entail?
Okay. So I just want to clarify the first question. Do you mean when they're reporting in order to get their bonus? Okay. Yep. That's a huge concern, particularly in projects implemented with utilizing performance-based financing, because you're being paid based on either the number of services you provide or reaching a target. So the project is very heavily staffed with monitoring and evaluation staff, and our training our organizations are they're regularly trained, and they understand very well that they can't falsify their data. We also do I'm not sure how often, I don't know if it's annually or quarterly, but there are data audits where they will go and make sure that the number of patients that they've reported are true. So, only at the intervention facilities. Yep. And we use the HMIS data. So this was the data that was reported to the National Recording System in Haiti for both the intervention and the control group. So,
I have a quick question. How were the 4 clinics chosen?
The 4 clinics or the 4 departments?
4 NGOs that were chosen to be the PBF intervention. Sorry, the 15 places that were.
They were the only 15 clinic. They were all of our clinics in those 4 departments. So all of our NGOs in those 4 departments.
So they were MSH NGOs compared to the non-MSH.
They were MSH-supported NGOs. So they're either local or international NGOs. Not randomly chosen. And your second question was, so they're required to report their information monthly to our office in Port-au-Prince, and they keep track of goals and targets and objectives for each of the NGOs in their facilities. So when they come, when they report each month and they see that they're a little bit off track or they're struggling, a team is sent out to that facility or to that NGO to work with them to identify some of the challenges that they may be facing and come up with solutions to help them get them back on track. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Thanks. All right, so we have had four papers. The first was Sally Greenwald, who talked with us about an HPV screening program in Haiti. Subjects were recruited through the churches. Anique talked with us about advanced life support training for obstetrics in Oaxaca, Mexico, and there was a blinded study to examine whether the obstetrical process outcomes were better. Dr. Duale talked with us on integrated disease surveillance and response in Africa using a survey of ministries of health across countries of Africa. And then we just heard from Catherine Dilley on performance-based financing in Haiti. So we now have about 15 minutes for questions for the four presenters. So I'll entertain questions in the back. And would you stand, please?
That their performance-based incentive payment is based on broad categories of indicators. So there's HIV/AIDS indicators, there's maternal health indicators, there's child health indicators. And the way that the payment is made right now, they're randomly selecting, so under that HIV/AIDS subset of indicators, there may be four or five or six things that they're required to report on each month, which specific, you know, so maybe it's number of voluntary counseling and testing sessions, number of HIV tests given, number of patients receiving antiretroviral therapy. They don't know which one of those specific indicators will be the one that's incentivized until they come and you hold an envelope and they randomly draw it. So with this study, what we did was we looked at, and I actually have it here, this is the health information, the health management system report that they submit each month to the health information. So what we looked at was, for the facilities in which we work, what are going to be appropriate markers for incentivized services? Because our facilities have way more information than facilities that we aren't supporting. So that was when we looked at consultations for children under one, consultations for children 1 to 4, pregnant women, things like that. So again, our indicators, the things that we were looking at, were more of a marker for services that were likely to be incentivized. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay.
Other questions? Donna?
I wanted to ask about the other health providers in the hospitals, in particular nurses. In that, I think one of the slides you showed actually said that some nurses were trained in the also in technique. But then also those two indicators that you showed that were different, like that showed the most difference between the trained and untrained, clearly those are things that are done by nurses, usually not by doctors. And so just can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I'll talk about it as best as I can. What I know for sure is that
maybe you should come up and talk here.
I am. Okay. Mm-hmm. My voice is something good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just said that I'll try to answer as best as I can. What I know for sure is that the observers followed physicians. But when they, I don't think that indicator is of what happened to the patient. So it is likely that in a team, the nurse, you know, took the measurement, took the blood test, or whatever it was. But yet the doctor got the credit for it. So.
That is so unusual.
And you had a question in the back.
Yes,
oh, the one behind you, but. We'll have him and then you.
Yeah. I'm sorry if you've already answered this in your presentation, Catherine. Yep. So if you did, tell me later. I want to know the incentive payment.
Uh-huh.
Is that to individual or facility? Is that to individual? What percent of the salary is that?
Okay. The incentive payments were to the entire NGO. So, for example, a number of the NGOs that we support have multiple service delivery sites. So there are more than, so we pay the NGO and they trickle it down in a way that they have determined to be appropriate. Sometimes that means they're purchasing equipment for their facilities. Sometimes that means they're holding parties for their staff to commemorate work well done, or they're giving individual bonus payments. It really varies. What I can tell you is I don't have the specific amounts that were made in my head, but I can tell you that the maximum bonus that they can receive is 105% of the budget in which we support them. So they're not fully funded by MSH. We provide a certain proportion of their funding, and the way that the scheme is set up, they receive 95% of that budget, and there's a potential for loss, as well, but it can only go up to 105% of their budget. So it's only a 5% bonus on the amount that is budgeted that we cover.
Okay.
To the NGO.
And then it's theirs to do with what they believe.
All right, I'll take this question in the back.
Question is actually a comment. I'm not sure if you know that observation period is about 6 months, is that correct? You said that there were observers following your position for a period of time. Is it about like 6 months, did you say?
They observed a position over the 10 months. Yeah.
Yes, so, but the result you reported in aggregate over time, and I wonder if the original author can analyze it as a spread out by time, like in the first short period, the adherence actually is pretty high in the also group. So I'm really interested to see like if they actually forgot or overwhelmed by the initial practice and everything got diluted out.
Yeah, you know, I think.
Good question.
Yeah, that is a very good question. I'm going to note that down and get back to my colleagues. But I think from what I know about the study and from the information we got back from other stakeholders, it's very possible that what you're saying, I mean, that initially there was a kind of burst of change of taking on the training and then kind of figured out the time. But it sounds like there are a lot of other things that are far more influential in preventing the training from kind of taking on. A lot of them are the infrastructure things that I mentioned. And then there's, you know, I'm working outside of the US for so long, so I don't know if this happens. But there's a lot of issues about seniority and doctors. And so a lot of the doctors find it very difficult to take on board new things that they've learned, particularly since they imported from outside of Mexico, because the attitude of, well, you know, how do they know what we should be doing? But people tend to follow what they were taught, and it's very, very difficult. Perhaps more difficult than another place to move away from that. So I think what you're saying is probably lacking. I said they should have a look at it. They will have a look at it. But I think there are a lot of other things as well.
Are there any questions specifically for our first two speakers who haven't had any questions yet? The integrated disease surveillance from Africa or... Okay, go ahead.
One of the questions that was asked in the assessment is where are they getting their funding for the integrated disease surveillance and response? And as you said, there's a lot of countries are getting the funding from external sources. But because a lot of them have adopted the IDSR strategy as the framework for disease surveillance, they will use the funding to implement the IDSR. Yeah, because they said this is our framework for disease surveillance. Although there's still some well-funded vertical disease program that still try to not be really part of the system. But countries are making effort to make sure that the money is coordinated and is supporting what is going on.
That's a theory.
Yes, behind.
I'm wondering if the Pan-African Food Governance Initiative, with more of an emphasis on trying
As I was saying, one of the things is what kind of tool district have to support integrated disease prevention and response. And one of the tools is tool to manage and transfer data. And most of the country at district level already have computers. It is catching up, but it's not all the districts have computers yet. So this is something that a lot of countries still have to make effort to provide districts with computer. There are some pilot projects trying to now introduce PDA or things like that, but there's still a need to set some of the basic at the health center that can be used. And we didn't put it here, we were trying to see how many districts already have access to internet. And there are some countries where districts already have access to internet, but there are still very, very few. So this is an area that we just revised the IDSR technical guideline. The previous one was based mainly on manual computing of information, all that. Now we are trying to, the new one, focus more on using software and a computer. So country will use that as a way of mobilizing resources to buy the computer system.
And in our work in Uganda this summer, we found many districts with computers, but their data were all corrupted by viruses. So, the personal computing virus network is alive and well across Africa. let's see, what time is it? We have about 4 minutes. Last question, maybe especially for Sally, HPV in Haiti. Any questions?
I'm just curious, in your overview, you went over the things that are being looked at for abnormal cervical in low-resource settings, but you didn't touch on, I don't know what they call it, HPV testing or hypercapsaicin and that's also being looked at really strongly in the literature. So I'm just wondering what you thought about that and why you didn't think about going that way.
As terms of just doing the HPV as a screening tool I did the HPV subtyping in my study mostly for like collection of information versus a screening tool, which is, you know, what they do. They do that in England, they do that in many countries, and we've talked about doing it here to expand the time course in which a woman, you know, needs a pap smear. One of the limiting factors in this study was obviously resources. So it was, you know, what was donated to me to complete this study was limiting the number of HPV subtypes that I was able to do. And I think that's, you know, to be expected in a study this size, but it's also, you know, something to think about in general. So I don't think that HPV subtyping could be done on a, you know, population level in Haiti because it is so expensive.
You know, I don't mean HPV subtyping. I mean the particular test, hybrid capture
to just see if it's present.
Yeah, just to get a positive or a negative of a multi number, which is being used in a lot of research. Instead of see and treat, and instead of VIA, and instead of PAPs, and the research is showing that it's pretty good as a screening tool.
Yeah, and they've been coming out with cheaper and cheaper alternatives, which is kind of like...
That's why I didn't want to say hypercapsaicin.
Yeah, definitely, which is definitely, it's pretty exciting. I think that, you know, if I were to expand this, you know, which I would like to do with the subtyping, that would definitely be something I would look into in terms of screening. And I think that, you know, the cons to that being that there's still, you know, maybe one more step diagnostically before you start therapeutic options. With the see and treat, we're jumping, you know, straight to the therapeutic with lots to follow up, like I showed you, being such a problem. But it's definitely, yeah, it's getting cheaper and better, and it's really exciting, and I hope to look into that.
So thanks to all of you for coming to a session on health system strengthening, something near and dear to my heart. And don't forget to look for International Health Section business meeting tomorrow afternoon and for other International Health Section sessions and events. We are eager to get participation from our members. And thanks to our panelists once more.